Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. Terry Foy here with Kyle Devitt. We are coming back from a week off. Kyle, I really needed that week off from you.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Except we didn't have a week off from each other. We just kind of saw each other in person, and that was enough for 2 weeks.
True. And then we also communicated via, you know, different types of media in order to produce other things. So unfortunately, we weren't as lazy as taking a week off from doing a 35-minute podcast would suggest that we are.
True.
So let's talk about this weekend, because the MLL, essentially, they packed 2 weekends worth of goals into 1 weekend by not playing the week before. Every game went over 30 goals. I didn't care enough to look back and see when the last time that happened was, but I don't know. It seems like a thing. What do you say to that?
I'm sure it happened back in the day with the Carolina teams, like the Riptide and the Dragons and stuff, because they were notorious for giving up tons of goals and scoring lots of goals. So I'm sure it's happened before, but it's definitely nice to see now with, you know, except for Ohio, the expansion franchises putting up G's. But yeah, it was good. It was actually one of the it's probably the best weekend so far, because the most amount of talent was on the field all around for every game and pretty much every team.
And that's the theme we've been talking about, because, you know, it's definitely rookies, NLL players, first wave of rookies. You know, going back, there's been like a new infusion of talent like every week.
Yep. Yeah, it's consistently ramped up. And, you know, the last guy to come in to hopefully, you know, maybe swing the pendulum once more is probably Steele Stamick, and we're still waiting on that. But you talked to him at the Tourathon, right? He's just a couple weeks off.
I did, yeah. He. It's funny. One of the things that I think you don't necessarily realize about, like, college athletes, all of the things that occur in the couple weeks after you finish up, like, I mean, I remember remembering basically nothing from the last, like, month of college. So, you know, it's obviously going to be different for a college athlete. But, you know, when you finish the season and you're either actually injured or dinged up, well, all of a sudden, you know, there goes all of your support, right? Like, you know, you don't have access. Like, he lives in Baltimore now. He moved back to Baltimore. He doesn't live close to the Charlottesville training staff, Virginia training staff in Charlottesville. So he's just kind of resting, and, you know, hoping that I think he said that, you know, maybe he's probably getting back out right around now, maybe early next week, to shooting, running a little bit, and then, you know, we'll see what happens, obviously, heading into the what have you as far as the MLL season is concerned. But you're right, I'm interested in anxiously awaiting his return to see what his style of play will have on that offensive team.
Right. Do you think, and this is what I asked Garber on the conference call this week, do you think a guy like that, a guy that can distribute the ball behind the cage, someone that they really do not have right now in Ohio, is going to make that big of a difference? Do you think that's going to change how they play? Because as it is, they're basically just a fast break team. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like it's like a stampede every time they get the ball off a turnover. They're just running straight up the field. No one, like, runs to the box like almost every other team in the league. They just go. They don't care. Like, there's teams that have, you know, a couple guys like Matt Abbott will stay on and he'll run for the Bayhawks. The long poles will run for the Cannons. But Ohio, just they don't. It seems like they're trying to make all these D middies into two way middies and all these O middies into D middies. And I think that's where they're getting in trouble.
Well, maybe it's because they don't have an actual go-to guy in 6-on-6 offense outside of Chaz just bombing at the cage. And, you know, those guys take a shot in transition, miss, it gets backed up, and then you're into your 6-on-6 offense. You're not going to take advantage of an unsettled situation there. So when you ask how much of a difference could it make, I would argue that it could make all of the difference, because they basically go from not having a 6-on-6 option to having one. But the real question is, can you assume that Steele Stamick is going in the MLL is going to be Steele Stamick in college lacrosse? I mean, I don't know what your opinion has been of the rookies so far, but I'm pretty impressed by their ability to be productive this year. You know, I think every year you got to press the reset button because the league changes, the overall quality of the class changes a little bit. Mark Matthews comes out and puts up, what, 7 points last week? I mean, you know, to me, there's a reasonable expectation that Steele's going to come out and just, you know, be able to throw passes all over the field. And ultimately, you know, the question is, how is he – I think Steele's game takes a little bit of time to adjust, because the thing that he is probably best at is knowing how his teammates want to get the ball in what spots and then figuring out for himself how to do that. But, like,
right,
that takes a little bit more time than, you know, just being able to catch everything that's thrown at you on the crease and put it in, or being able to run past somebody, you know what I mean? So I think that there's probably a little bit of a more gradual learning curve for Stanwyck and the Machine than there might be for some of the other high-profile rookies. Even a guy like Rob Pinnell, who, you know, was so good at breaking guys down, so good at getting his hands free for either a shot or a feed, and then being able to get the ball where he wanted it. You know, I think that his game is actually even a little bit less nuanced than Steele's, insofar as having it taking time to adjust to. It was funny, I was talking to a guy yesterday about what Rob Pinnell returning to Cornell means, and he was basically just saying, oh, it's just summer ball. You just roll the ball out there and Rob does his thing. You don't really run an offense around Rob Pinnell. To right. the degree to which that's true for Steele, which I don't think it's true to the same degree. I think you could talk to Matt Rakowski and Mark Van Arsdale, and they would tell you different things about how much those two guys play within a certain structured offense and how structured that offense is. You know, I think that in the MLL, the way in which Steele a transition in there, it's going to be really interesting. But then, you know, the other thing that, you know, Quinn could get a little bit over repetitive in terms of making his points, but when he does that, oftentimes it's because those are his best points. And Quinn's whole thing with Steele is how he takes advantage of, like, unsettled situations, quick restarts, all sorts of stuff like that. He turns non-unsettled situations into unsettled situations, and I think that he might have an easier time of doing that in the MLL because with less coaching and a greater ability to take advantage of the referees, you can find those advantages in more greater volume. And I think if he's able to do that, it could potentially yield some really big things for an offense that, like you said, or maybe not outright said, but I think implied, they have to find their advantages because, as we knew, they don't have the stockpile of talent that, you know, the more established teams do just because of the fact that they're an expansion team.
Right. Right. No, I think it's an interesting point, but I think it's also worth noting that the best teams in the league, aside from Denver, don't even care about rookies. They just have their team, and they're like Boston and Chesapeake, like they'll dress a couple guys, but they have their team now. You know, those are two teams that are kind of at the top of the league win wise. And, you know, even though Boston went down to Rochester, they're not really dressing rookies at all. I mean, Chesapeake dressed Adams, and I can't recall the name of the other guy off the top of my head, but they dressed another guy this weekend that was a rookie, but that's like the first time they've dressed him. And like, everyone was talking about Fiorito and stuff. I haven't seen Fiorito yet. They just traded for Mike Gable.
Well, I think he might actually be going to Costa Rica with Princeton because the whole team is going down to Costa Rica.
Right.
So I think he's doing that, which actually explains the trade a little bit.
Well, Wiedmeyer played last week though. So
Fiorito could have played last week, taken this week off, and then come back.
Yeah. I mean, he could have played a couple of weeks is kind of what I'm saying. I mean, they have such a stockpile, and like those two teams in particular are really good at stockpiling veteran talent. And then you have guys like Long Island that they're basically cursed and they have to pick off guys from waiver wires or local guys and hope they work out. And, you know, Long Island got really lucky with Langtree, who, I mean, you and I were talking a little bit today. Did you ever think that you'd see Langtree atop the goal scoring column in the MLL, like five games in, above Paul Rabel and everyone else for that matter?
It's pretty amazing. I mean, it definitely has, like, I'm trying to think of like another good like comparison in another sport. You know what I mean? A guy that I feel like so many times people have said, yeah, I think he's just, you know, he's only got a year left in him. I mean, this isn't a good comparison, but it's a little bit reminiscent to the conversations about Garnett heading into the playoffs and whether or not Boston was going to look to re-sign him, to his performance throughout the playoffs for the Celtics, basically making almost a foregone conclusion that Boston's going to re-sign him. Or at least that's the way the sports guy's talking about it. I don't know. I mean, no, I did not expect that. It was funny. You know, I saw him. We went out to Denver for the Whitman's Sampler Mile High Classic. Got a got to serve the sponsors, paying our bills. Funny sidebar on that. So, you know the, do you watch Seinfeld, or are you a human being that watched Seinfeld?
Yes, I love. Yes.
Good. Okay, you remember the episode with Tony, played by Dan Cortez, the real cool guy that Elaine was dating, that George became infatuated with, and they went rock climbing with Kramer?
Yeah.
Okay, so Tony, spoiler alert for an episode that's like 19 years old, falls because of an placed whatever those, I don't know, I don't go rock climbing, so I don't know what it is, but basically the things that make you not fall, either Kramer or George screwed something up. So, jump cut to Tony having gotten out of the hospital, and he's recovering at Elaine's, and George comes over to their house, or Elaine's apartment, to like wish him well. He delivers or brings with him a box of Whitman samplers. I just thought that was awesome.
Wow.
Took a long time to get there, right?
Not a lot of TV down there in Baltimore, huh?
Dude, I am totally done with new TV. I watch sports and syndicated sitcoms. That's pretty much it.
I just figured all you Baltimore people watch The Wire on like repeat looped.
Well, it comes on TV 101 or whatever. I get DirecTV, so whatever that DirecTV channel is, it comes on there. And yeah. How about it? I don't watch Game of Thrones, so that's why I'm not partaking in your tweet war.
No, that's fine. That's cool.
So anyway, we're out at the Whitman Sampler Mile High Classic, and I went by a Highlands Ranch High School Highlands, I apologize, practice coached by Matt Bocklet and Brian Langtry. And Tree is just ripping G's on these, like, you know, 17-year-old goalies with a long pole from like 19 yards out, going crazy with his long hair. It was awesome, number one. But number two, at that point, I was like, yeah, this maniac has at least a little bit more left in him. And obviously that turned out to be the case. I didn't think that he was going to be 14 goals or 15 goals deep through four or five games, but, you know, what do I know?
I mean, apparently you knew that was going to happen, sort of. I mean, that's kind of what you intimated. But, I mean, it's crazy to me. That's crazy to me. Think of all the people the Lizards lost. And I kind of like touched on it in the column this week, but like think of all the people they lost. Pinnell, not playing this summer. Zach Greer, DNR'd. You know, they traded Danowski and Berger and basically got nothing.
Don't forget about Romel Braddon.
Yep, sure. The one Braddon. And then they traded John Grant Jr. And the only trade, ironically, that worked out for them was the John Grant Jr. trade. And that's because they picked up Matt Gibson as like a throw-in in that trade. I looked it up. I didn't know that they weren't the ones that drafted him. Chesapeake drafted him. And he just came in, and he has been amazing. Like two goals and eight assists in two games. That's nuts. I mean, did you think that, like, you know, I haven't seen a lot of him play at Yale, but watching him come out and, like, not really dominate, but just play with such better players, it's like he got the chains taken off him, you know? And I say that out a lot about all these guys coming in with a lot of talent, that they are chained up by whatever system their school runs or their offense runs. And, like, it might not be the ideal system for them, but it's the ideal system for the team. So in college, you run that. But, you know, you can't mistake like a diamond in the rough like that. That's just such a great acquisition for them. And just like Langtry, you know, they've just made, you know, a nice little flank stick without any marinade. And it's pretty sweet to watch. I kind of like watching them play now, whereas last year I hated watching every second of the Lizards play because it was maddening.
Well, let's talk about some of these games individually. We've basically touched on like half or all of them, depending on how you look at it. But we had an overtime game winner out of the Rattlers, who, I guess my question about the Rattlers is, are they the most polarizing team in the MLL? Are they the team that you can see showing up in different ways now that they are 2-2 with wins over the Boston Cannons?
Well, I think they just keep changing who they dress. Like, if they picked not even the full 19, if they picked the same, you know, 12 players, 14 players, and just changed a couple other guys, they'd be fine. But they keep not being able to play, or like, I have to miss this game because of this, and they plug in another guy and he does well, and then the other guy's like, well, what do I do when I come back. And I feel like when you toy with your team that much, you can't get any continuity with not only results, but philosophy with the team, you know? And obviously when they win, Ned Crotty has a big game. Goes without saying. Ned Crotty makes the team go, but it's the guys around him that, I mean, Jake Card played in one game this weekend against the Canes, the first game in the MLL all season, was 2-2, was one of the most threatening players on the field, and was the second guy to take pressure off of Crotty, which they haven't had since they traded Catalina. You know, so why wasn't he playing from day one? Why wasn't he, you know, there's all these questions and all that stuff, and it's all about the stuff that I don't like to talk about, like, oh, he's playing summer box, or he was playing NLL, or he was doing whatever. I don't really care about that anymore. I mean, we're past it, I feel, at this point. But he should be playing in every game now. You know, you have Kevin Lavelle injured on IR. Stephen Boyle's back there. I mean, do you just take Stephen Boyle out and plug Lavelle in and hope that he works with those two guys? Because he's not the kind of player that I think works with just two guys like that. You know, he can't be the third guy. Lavelle's not the third guy on any team. He's a guy you have to make plays for and set up. And in the game that he played with Crotty, the one game he did, he didn't look that good. So because their styles don't really mesh so much as people probably thought they did. But Rochester just needs to stop making so many changes. They like throw in and out faceoff guys like it's fun. Like the Rattlers. That's got to be like the worst thing ever. It's just like, oh, yeah, nah, you're not dressing this week. Oh, you know what? We're going to trade you to Long Island. You know what? You know, make the drive, but don't dress. It's like, come on. Pick a guy. You have to go with a guy there. That's a position where you have to go with a guy, just like goalie. And what do? They trade Gable for table scraps to the Bayhawks.
To your point about guys not being able to play in every game, how about Matt Strebel being one of six players who have played in four games for the Rochester Rattlers? He got injured in the first game, and like we were talking as if his career was done. Like I thought he tore a hamstring. Yeah. He's played in every game.
Yeah. And he's good. He's, you know what he's doing this year that he didn't really do last year is he's trying to turn the corner on the guy after the dodge. Like he used to just settle for that. Like he would get his hands free and rip. And now he's like taking that extra step and kind of picking his head up a little, not that he didn't before, but doing it a little more and looking for guys that are open and now they're open. And he's doing really well. He's definitely one of the surprises of the season, I think, because despite, you know, he's not putting up gaudy numbers, but he's putting up solid numbers, you know, whereas in the past, like if someone like with his veteran tenure, I won't say age, but veteran tenure was someone injured with a hammy, you'd be like, oh, he's done. But he's not. And I'm pretty glad he's not. So
there you go.
You know, yeah.
All right, let's move on. What's the next game you want to talk about? Is it the debacle in Ohio?
No, I don't even think we need to talk about it. It's kind of like it was a nice game. It was pretty back and forth for three quarters. And then the fourth quarter was the most atrocious defense I've ever seen in my life. And I wish that I could forget it. Lizards just scoring like eight straight, six straight, something like that, something crazy. It was not fun to watch unless you're a Lizards fan. It was, you know, it was awful. Six, seven, yeah, eight. Eight goals in a row. That's awful. You cannot give up eight goals in a row in the last quarter of a game and be like, well, good job, guys. We almost had them. You know, that's awful. I'm sorry.
Sometimes
and for a team
guess.
That's supposed to be – for a team that's supposed to be defensive, let's be real. I mean,
well, they weren't necessarily supposed to be a good defensive team. They were just going to be better defensively than they were offensively. But that identity is actually probably in the process of changing.
It's a little bit of a change of tune, don't we think? Don't we think that's a little bit of a change of tune there, Terry?
Out of me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. Well, yeah. I guess, I mean, that's the thing, is that, you can't call me out for that when I was one of the few people that thought that they were going to be at least mediocre. And at 1-3, with, you know, I guess another game that was potentially winnable, they are mediocre, right? Like, that's what they are. I didn't think, I was just anti, they are not going to win a game all season, and I said that it was going to be the strength of their defense that was going to keep them within contention to winning a couple games this season.
Right.
I don't think I was saying that they were going to produce three All-Stars from the defensive end.
Right. I'm not the one who said that they were not going to win a game. I think we all know who that was. That was not me. Let's be clear there.
He actually denies that he said that.
That is ridiculous. There's documentation that he said that.
I know. I called him out for it. It was pretty fun.
Oh, good times. Yeah, that was a rough game. Obviously, Rochester, Boston. And I'm sure the CBS sports people are livid with me for pointing out that I couldn't see anything on the screen for the whole overtime of Rochester, Boston. But it's true. I could not tell what was going on. I barely could see player numbers. The only thing that I could see were like splashy colored figures running up and down some sort of green surface. That's all I could tell. It was like, it was awful. It's like watching a game like hammered or something. It didn't make any sense. Like the feed cut out at one point. Like, I know it's like the first game that you're broadcasting, probably the first lacrosse game for maybe people in that production crew, but it was bad. And it just, I felt like it needed to be pointed out, even though it'll probably come at, you know, expense to myself, but it just needs to be better. I think the game they broadcast the next day was better, Charlotte Hamilton, but you know, there was no weather concerns. The camera's farther away than it is for ESPN games. Have you noticed that at all?
I have not noticed that, but I also don't know if I've seen enough games from each of those venues to know, to be familiar with where the camera bays are.
No, I mean, not even the camera bays, just the angle that they take. And I know that changes from stadium to stadium, but the where they settle for the establishing shot, if you will, is pretty far away, I feel. And I think that could be rectified. And obviously ESPN worldwide leader.
So you're referring to the actual zoom, not like
I'm referring to the actual zoom. Yeah. I feel like it's really far away. I went like, when I can't see the player numbers, you're too far away. You know, that's just how I feel. If I'm watching a game on TV, if I can't see your player numbers, either you have funky numbers or I'm too far away. Right? Isn't that what the numbers are for, so you can tell who's who?
That's fair, but you're starting to sound like a college SID, because that's what they complain about.
Oh. Well, that's not the worst thing I've been told. But, you know, I feel like that game could have been, you know, filmed better, and yeah, it was bad weather, but whatever. It was a good game, though. I mean, from what I could tell was happening. You know, Boston kind of let him back in, and Rochester made him pay. You know, and the one thing that Rochester has, they have Ned Crotty, and you know, with Jay Card, you know, there's no film on Jay Card. So the Cannons were like, I don't know who to put on this guy. So, and it definitely showed. And the game winner from Roy Lang came on J.J. Morrissey, just a sweep right down the alley. And there was no slide at all. And there was people, like, looking around after the goal, and they were really far away. I swear, I couldn't tell from the camera, but it looked like Jack Reed was behind the cage, and it looked like Sweeney was all the way out on the wing, which didn't make any sense to me at all because there was no one ready to go. So it could have just been a minor defensive miscue or just a massive breakdown. But, you know, that was the game winner, and you know, you kind of felt it was going to happen. It was watching the game. So it was a good game. I mean, you didn't see it. You need a chance to check it out.
No, I haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a classic, but it's definitely a good game to watch to get a good feel of how Boston and Rochester play. And it's such a stark contrast to their first meeting in the season opener. And that's due in most part to the personnel that Rochester put out there.
Excellent. And then you wanted to save it.
Yeah. Denver Chesapeake was awesome, man. Quinn called the game, and he's ranting the whole time. He's just like, God, it's such a great goal. And I'm like, I agree with you. You know, just kind of like twirling my non-existent mustache. Like, yes, this is an excellent game. You know, if you missed it, I would recommend going back and checking it out. Highlight goals, like you read about. Highlight saves. Kip Turner made crazy saves in that game. You know, the Denver defense blocked crazy amounts of shots in that game, just sacrificing, throwing bodies, throwing checks. It was just a magnificent example of the MLL in general. And I really wish that, you know, people could hold that. That's the game I would hold up if I was just like, hey, you want to invest in lacrosse. This is why you invest. This is a great sport. This is why the sport's great. This is
or what resonates with me, because your comments about Quinn and his getting excited about the game, all that speaks to me is a guy who's come off of a season of calling college lacrosse games. This is the type of game that you show college lacrosse fans, hey, this is what you get when you come to this.
Right. And really, like, there, if you people wanted to complain about the scoreline or like, no defense, there was tons of defense in that game. There was a ridiculous amount of defense in that game, and it still ended up 18-16. You know, you can have a good defensive game with those many goals being scored. It's just people are so close-minded about it. And so, you know, I love the restraining box. Like, who loves the restraining box? It's such a dumb thing. Restraining box is a dumb thing in lacrosse. I'm sorry. I'm sounding like a crazy person. But, you know, it was such a great game. I watched it twice. It was great. And I would recommend it to anybody just kind of jumping onto the league or coming in as a new fan or anything like that. Check that game out. It's on ESPN 360. Like, you can check it out online and through various apps and whatnot. But it's definitely one of the best game. Definitely the best game of the season, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's talk to one of the participants with whom we already recorded an interview. And I kind of wish that we were talking to him now, because your enthusiasm makes me want to ask him some more questions about the game in particular. But we're going to talk to Brendan Mondorf. He is an attackman for the Denver Outlaws, and he's the man. So let's bring him in. And we are joined now by Denver Outlaw attackman Brendan Mondorf, coming off a huge game. 3 goals and 5 assists, right, last week for the Outlaws, and now 16 points on the season. Brendan, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I guess just, you know, first things first, very basic, you know, you're now an established MLL veteran, and you're off to another hot start this season. How would you describe the way that the first four games of the 2012 season have gone for you?
Well, it's been interesting. I jumped in a little bit late with these guys. They'd already had 2 wins under their belt, and so I jumped in with a lot of new players that I haven't ever played with. You know, key guys like Jesse, our attack, or our defense back there with like Zink, and those guys, those are our key guys that are always there. But it's fun, and definitely challenging, but it's a good challenge for both these new guys. It's really fun getting to know new players on the field. So I've had a lot of fun so far, and I think my role sort of changed a little bit on the team with sort of the new look Outlaws right now.
Hey, Brendan, it's Kyle. Just to kind of follow up on that, in the offseason, there was a complete overhaul of the franchise, both behind the scenes with Reese and Slate departing and Stagnita and Seaman coming in, and also on the field with Westervelt being traded, Langtree no longer being with the franchise. I mean, what has changed the most for you in the midst of all the turnover?
Well, I'd say while that was going on, I really just had to think about, you know, who we're going to bring in to replace those guys. I mean, when you lose Seabold, Langtree, Westervelt, guys that I've played with my entire career, it's going to be different. So first of all, it was like, you know, how are we going to replace these guys? I think we did a good job of bringing in some young talent and a couple of guys who have been in the league for a few years and haven't really had an opportunity to play. But I think we're where we need to be. We have good midfielders. We've definitely added some really nice Canadian guys to the attack unit, as you guys saw this week. And really, it's just about trying to get everybody gelling together. I mean, I felt like that was my biggest responsibility as the veteran leader on the offensive end of the field, just trying to get everybody comfortable in their role, playing good lacrosse, playing team ball, and being able to do that and sort of peak at the right time. So going well so far, I think. You know, we've lost a couple of tight ones the past couple of weeks, but I'm happy. I'm happy with the changes we made. I'm not really happy about not being able to play with, you know, a couple of my good buddies, but you know, it is what it is, and we've done a good job sort of revamping the offense, revamping the team, and I'm happy so far.
Brendan, I don't want to, you know, basically ask you the same question every time I talk to you, but the fact is that, you know, you obviously had, you know, such a good relationship playing-wise with Drew. I wrote a story about the UMBC pipeline to the MLL 2 summers ago, and at the time, you know, basically, like, Terry was just starting to break out. You know, Pete was coming off an unbelievable season, and, you know, even though you're not playing with Drew, another retriever, you know, now Pete and Terry come in, and, you know, the three of you are, you know, top four in scoring on the squad with, you know, a Maryland guy leading the way. What's kind of that dynamic like, you know, being out in Denver with a new group of guys, but ultimately, you know, at least to some degree, I got to imagine it's a relatively similar attitude and identity that you guys have going on offensively.
It is, and I think we've always been, you know, this year more than ever, it's all about moving the ball and playing as a team. But, you know, the goals we're scoring now aren't always just one dodge and a guy getting a goal for himself. So a lot of assisted goals. We're sharing the ball well. I think the group we have, everybody's unselfish. Nobody needs to carry the ball around forever and try to get their points that way. I think everybody's, you know, the whole message that I'm saying to everybody is do your job, do it well, and don't worry about trying to do too much. You know, touch the ball, draw a slide, bang it on, it'll come back to you. And I think everybody's bought into that so far, and it's fun. It's really fun to play with those guys from UMBC, and it's fun to, you know, get to know some of these new guys. We're doing well so far, so hopefully we can keep it up and get a little bit better at it.
Brady, you came into the league a little bit, a couple games late because of your NLL commitments. And, you know, a lot of people made something of that with all the guys that were missing the first couple games. What's the biggest challenge that you faced playing lacrosse all year round from the NLL to the MLL and everything in between?
Well, I think the biggest challenge other than just the overall like travel commitment you dedicate yourself to playing on two teams, it's just trying to stay fresh every week, setting goals for yourself and staying focused. It's very easy to get complacent and sort of lose your focus coming into games saying, you know, this is one of however many games, one of 30 games this season, and sort of get lost in the mix and sort of get, you know, the season get dull at some points. And you just need to mentally prepare yourself all week knowing that, you know, every game is important and it can – playoffs can come down to one game, whether you're in the playoffs or you're out of the playoffs. So you have to treat every game like it's a playoff game each week. And that mental, the mental side of the game is probably the hardest part about, you know, playing all year round, just staying fresh, you know, working out during the week and then coming in mentally ready to go on a game weekend.
I love that Kyle asked you that question because at the beginning of the season I was making a big deal out of like how many different things are a part of that adjustment. I think actually it was a conversation that I had with you just about like, you know, whether it's something as simple as switching sticks, you know, can be difficult to kind of adjust to. But, you know, one thing I do want to ask about is you mentioned at the top that your personal style of play has adjusted a little bit in conjunction with the way in which the team style of play has adjusted. What have you had to do differently? How have you kind of altered your game from, I think, you know, what a lot of people identified as, you know, maybe that corner dodger, get to the crease type guy? What are some of the things that you're doing a little bit differently this year?
I think more of my responsibility this year is going to be to control the pace of the game, knowing when we need to push transition, knowing when we need to pull the ball out, and when we have to get a good long possession and almost chew up a shot clock to, you know, get one good shot. And really just to distribute the ball a little bit more. These young guys, it's important that everybody's getting their touches, and it's important that there's a good flow to the offense. And I think it's all last week, and hopefully that continues, and being able to feed the ball. We have really, really good off-ball players, which I don't think we've always had in the past, guys that really know how to get open. And it's going to be important for me to be able to find them throughout the game because they're always getting open, as you can see. I mean, McBride, it's like he's, you know, somehow uncovered on almost every play at the end of the play. And so I think I'll just take on more of almost like a feeder role. I mean, I still love to dodge. That's what I think I'm the best at, but I'm going to have my head up a little bit more knowing that that quick slide will come and there's going to be open guys all over the field.
All right. Well, Brendan Mundorf, quick and dirty. That's the way we like it. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast, and we will hope to talk to you again soon. Good luck the rest of the way. So Kyle, that was Brendan Mundorf. We've, you know, basically just pretended like we did an interview there in the interim, and then ultimately in editing, I will just splice it in between these two comments. Yeah, not a ton, because like I said, I really wish we had just been able to redo it and ask him a little bit more about the game. But I will say that it's interesting to hear him talk about, you know, kind of what his, like how his role has had to change based on the new arrivals. And I think it's one of the things that's a little bit difficult to consider, think about, keep in mind, whatever the case may be, when you talk to or when you realize that, you know, this guy, like, he didn't change teams, but his team changed so dramatically, it's almost as if he did. I don't know, that's just something that I don't really necessarily think about that often. I think it's interesting when you do.
Yeah, that's kind of why I asked him the question that I asked. It really is a complete upheaval of that team, and that team is really totally different, but somehow eerily similar to how it used to be. You have, you know, familiar faces like, you know, Schwartzman and Mundorf and Zink and, you know, all those guys coming back. Kind of stinks about Eric Martin being out for the rest of the year. That's what Stegna told us on the conference call. So that's kind of tough. But, you know, the team's good, man. That's a good team. And Mark Matthews was crazy. He looked like junior, like young junior. Like, just he's so big. His stick looks like a toothpick in his hand. I didn't see enough of him over the college season, I guess. I only saw like maybe two or three games with him with Denver. But he's just – he's really – quite exceptional as a player. And, you know, him going fourth is kind of ridiculous now because he's not like,
well, that junior comparison has been, I mean, that, you know, not to burst your bubble, but you're not the first one to make that. That's been, that's been his MO, his comp for a while. And it's just interesting to see that it's coming to fruition, you know?
Well, I mean, you can compare someone to someone for so long, but until they get to that level, I think that you're just kind of, you know, throwing things out there, but this was a legit performance. It was a legit debut. You know, it was a non-auspicious debut. It was quite exceptional. I was really impressed. And as people on Twitter have been happy to inform me, it's apparently very hard to impress me. So that's good. You know, I really liked how he played, and I liked how Denver played too. You know, so like I said, check out the game if you haven't seen it yet. It was just great. What are you looking forward to this weekend?
I'm actually going to – I think I'm going to go to the Hounds Bayhawks game on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to that because it'll be my first live MLL game of the season. I'm really looking forward to seeing a few of these Charlotte guys play together. You know, I think one of the things I'm going to try to focus on a lot is how Boltus and Donowski, like, you know, interact, being primary distributors, each, you know, primary behind the cage guys, because – you know, to me, I think that they can complement each other really well. I just haven't gotten a chance to see him play that much. I'm excited for that. I want to see what, you know, Eric Lesby ends up doing. You know, how does momentum transition from college lacrosse to pro lacrosse, particularly 2 or 3 weeks later? There's a lot about that game that I'm excited for. And then ultimately, I also haven't seen the Bayhawks since they picked up Polanco. So Evans, Polanco, I mean, that defense. Spallina, is he going to be around? Is he going to be getting penalties and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, he's played every game. He's late. He Mark Matthews' first goal, he got taken down by Spallina with the infamous grab you from the other side of your neck and toss you to the ground and ride you like a dead pony into the dirt move. I enjoyed that. It was a good time. It was like, hey, welcome to league.
Ride you like a dead pony.
Yeah. Because it's falling to the ground.
Right? I realize it. I'm just thinking about it.
I don't know if you know this. I'm a writer.
That's a great one.
Yeah. I really actually, this is going to sound stupid, but especially after all the trash I just talked about Ohio's offense, but I'm happy to see Denver and Ohio go at it. I really want to watch that game. I think that game's going to be the best game of the weekend just because of the style of play from both teams. It's just fun and gun all up and down. I have no problem with that style of lacrosse, especially at this level, and I'm excited to see those two teams play, you know, and I feel like Denver's, you know, bit with the injury, but Poyon's still not going to be back. Martin's gone for the year, so, you know, we could see an upset there. I'm not going to predict it, but I think that game will be a lot closer than the one they played against Long Island.
Excellent. Well, that's going to do it for us, Kyle Devitt. Bravo on completing yet another MLL podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Inside the Cross Podcast.